This podcast is made possible by the generous contributions from listeners just like you. If you have the means and you'd like to contribute, click on the link in the show description to go to my supporter page. Once you're there, it's completely up to you how much you'd like to give. There's no minimum and no maximum and no ongoing charges. Enjoy this episode and thanks for listening to the Saturday Quiz.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi there, you're listening to The Saturday Quiz. My name's John Leary and it's so good to be back. As the host of this podcast, it's my job to ask the 10 questions from the quiz in the Saturday paper and it's up to my guests to come up with the answers. Joining me today are two men with a long history of creating comedy and satire for the ABC. Happily, that association is set to continue with the upcoming series Australian Epic. This six-part extravaganza takes some of the country's most colourful true stories and turns them into musicals. From Steve Bradbury's unlikely gold medal on ice to Johnny Depp's illegal importation of his dog's pistol and boo. Joining me today are the writers of this ridiculous union of musical and documentary. Welcome to the show, Chris Taylor and Andrew Hansen.
Hello, Johnny.
Hello,
it's
gentlemen.
It's lovely to be here.
So nice to have you on the show.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here, Johnny. And it's a reunion of sorts for us three, isn't it? Because
certainly.
We have just, as you said, very kindly mentioned, we've got a new musical show coming to the ABC. But we all met through the first musical that Andrew and I wrote together. But people might not know this, but Johnny Leary used to be a singer. He used to perform in musical theatre for the Sydney Theatre Company.
Not just singing. There was a dance involved too, Chris. A spectacular dance, actually. Johnny.
A true triple threat, you could call me, I guess, at that stage.
Oh, you used to bring the house down in.
Look, you
in
were very generous with the show. With giving me probably the best number on. The show was called Dead Caesar, and it was a version of Julius Caesar's assassination as a musical.
Yeah, sort of very vaudeville kind of late night review slash musical. It was It was commissioned. I think Brendan Cowell, the great actor and playwright, was running this experimental arm of the Sydney Theatre Company, encouraging angry young writers to develop their playwriting craft. And he gave me the opportunity to say something important, and I came back with this very lowbrow musical romp. Everyone's in togas. It was straight out of the 60s. It was but it was the most amazing cast. I mean, as well as yourself, John, you and Leslie and Leon Ford, Toby Leonard Moore, Monica's. I mean,
Toby Moore, who went on to star in Billions,
yes,
for God's sake.
Everyone anyway. Except Andrew and I went on to amazing things. And here we are still making lowbrow musical comedy for the ABC.
tell me about Australian Epic. How did that come about?
Well, are you going to tell the story, Chris? I mean, how did it come about? I mean, it was a thing where we were interested, since doing that musical with you, Johnny, in doing a full-length proper music thing. Because we'd done little bits of silly musicals in our Chaser shows. You know, we did a segment that Chris and I used to write together called If Life Were a Musical, where people would burst into song in public places. And we used to think, we sort of vaguely talked about maybe doing a full-on show one day. And
but it's, as you know, John, theatre's hard and expensive, and developing musicals in this country is really, really hard. I always take my hat off to anyone who gets a new Australian musical up. But I guess we sort of regarded ourselves as creatures of television. We actually went to SBS originally. For sad reasons, they decided they couldn't proceed with it for budget reasons. But then the ABC opened a door, and they pushed us even further to sort of choose stories that aren't just sort of great stories in their own right, but sort of say something about Australia, somehow are parables that reflect aspects of the Australian national character. So we've got, excellent, you know, the Bradbury story you mentioned is the classic underdog story. Then we've got some darker chapters. We do the Tampa, which a lot of people were quite nervous about us.
I'm sure. Our comedy musical about Tampa. Yeah.
It remains to be seen whether we succeeded or not. But we kind of think it's the most successful episode because it's a satire. It's not sort of flippant comedy. Mm. It's what we always did with The Chaser, which was satirise the politics of the day. So we look at the Howard government policies. We look at how the military was brought in and exploited as part of that chapter. Most of the shows, there's a lot of silliness in the shows, but a lot of it's really satirical about Australian values and none more so than the Tampa Rep.
I guess having something important to say, it always leads to probably the better outcome in terms of an artistic output.
Well, it's got a sort of a heart to it, the story, and Chris had the brilliant idea with the Tampa story of making it the story of one particular refugee. You know, we got in contact with Abbas Nazari, who was, you know, one of the people who was rescued by the crew of the Tampa. And so really it's his story, you know, and Chris interviewed Abbas to sort of be the main character in the show. And I think that's what also I think makes that story work, is that because it's his story, it's a human story. It's not just a story of government policies and things like that. Mm. It's about a real person.
Amazing.
And we couldn't have done it without him. I mean, his cooperation and just first-person testimony makes the show. There were other stories we wanted to do but couldn't. For that reason, we couldn't get the person to agree to tell their story.
Yeah, and we should say not all the stories are kind of, you know, very heavy emotional stories. I mean, we also, one of the stories is about the disastrous Melbourne Ferris wheel that kept falling down. You know, I mean, there's a very light and silly stories in there too.
Yeah.
But the Ferris wheel refused to speak to us and it was very hard to give it perspective,
All right. Well, on this podcast, I like to ask my guests before we get into the questions if they have a favorite piece of trivia. Do either of you have a favorite piece of trivia?
I was furious with a question in the Good Weekend a couple of weekends ago. I don't know if either of you.
Yes.
I'll give it to you now.
Go.
It was, what country does France share its longest border with?
Okay, interesting. Yeah, that's a tough one, actually.
Germany?
Is it going to be Germany?
That's
Germany?
What
is it going to be Germany?
We were debating in our household, Germany, maybe Spain, but probably Germany, locked in Germany. Fuck this. The answer was Brazil, because it's claiming French Guiana. And I cancelled my Herald subscription It's not part of France. No person would interpret that question as including colonies.
That's outrageous.
It's more than a colony, though, isn't it? Like French Guiana.
It is actually France.
Is it a province?
Is it one of their provinces?
Yeah.
Sure. Look, technically, it's part of France, but no one would read that question thinking it includes those territories.
No, it's one of those funny countries that has a peace then that's miles away. Like, you know, like Portugal has a peace.
Yeah.
They're nowhere near Portugal, the Azores.
The Azores.
I don't even know where they are.
Middle of the Atlantic. They look gorgeous. They're really beautiful. Oh. There's hydrangeas all over them. They look really
nice. Please, I'd like to go. It's Madeira's there. So that's where they invented Madeira.
The cake.
Not the cake, the drink. The cake. The cake was invented by the British, Johnny. If you want to quiz me, Madeira cake is a British cake that was designed to go with the Madeira drink.
Well, it doesn't have Madeira in it.
I've looked into this. I have looked into that.
What you're forgetting, Johnny, is that if Andrew ever went on Mastermind, Madeira would be his topic.
I'm big on that.
You've walked into a real...
I'm going to flunk the Saturday quiz, but you get me on the subject of Madeira. Madeira, they call it. They sort of call it Madeira or something like that.
Madeira? You say Madeira, I say Madeira. Let's call the whole thing off.
The questions I always like, I love questions that combine like geography with the English language. There was a great trivia question in a rival publications quiz recently, which named the only country in the world that ends in the letter G.
Oh, gee, it's... hang on. There's a country that ends in G. There's only one. Nothing ends in G. That's nonsense.
It ends in G in the English language or in its own language?
In the English language, yeah.
In the English language. Let me say, Peru, Egypt.
Do you want me to give you clues to get to it more quickly?
Is there an N before the G? Like, is it an ang or an ing or an ong type of country?
No, there's no N before the G. It's located in Europe.
Located in Europe? Gee whiz. Okay.
This would be very offensive to anybody who lives in that country. Do you have a lot of international fans of the podcast, Johnny? Because if they're they're living in Zulag or whatever the place is called,
when backpackers or holidaymakers sort of do Europe, it's not commonly on the itinerary. It's not one of the greatest hits, but you've heard of it.
Oh, this is a tough one.
It's small. It's small.
I'm going to need the answer given to me.
Yeah, no, so am I.
Well, okay, I'll give you one more clue. It's these two countries often come up in trivia. It's not Liechtenstein. It's the other one.
Oh, yes. What's that called?
Another one of those little tax dodgers. Is it full of tax dodging people?
I think it has a monarchy.
Like it's not Andorra doesn't end in G. I thought that was the
Andorag.
Other one. Andorag.
Begins with L.
It begins with L. Oh, no.
What is it?
Luxembourg.
Oh, yeah, I have heard of that. But that doesn't end in G.
That's so annoying.
It does end in G.
So I wouldn't have known that it ended in G. No one's ever spelled. I've never heard it spelt out, Chris.
I'm pretty sure you honeymooned in Luxembourg.
That would be nice. I just returned from Europe, and I did not go to Luxembourg.
Not many people do. It's about 2 square metres, I think, isn't it?
Something like that. All right. Well, thank you for those bits of trivia. They're very kind of geographical and Madeira-based bits of trivia, which are brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, before any more time gets away from us, please, let's jump into the actual quiz. Here we go. Question number one. Basal cell carcinoma is the most common but least serious form of what type of cancer? So a nice cheery opener.
All right. Can either of us just jump in?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a skin thing. You get those things on your nose, don't you?
You are correct. It is skin cancer. It is. It's a very common cancer. It's basal cell cancer accounts for at least 32% of all cancers globally.
Gosh,
so a full
very
third of
cancer.
Cancers. It's very popular cancer. And thankfully, it is a relatively, what do you say?
You can recover from it. It's not.
Yeah, it's a, yeah.
If
it's
your doctor tells you have it, you don't, that's, it, you don't, it's not the worst day of your life.
Exactly. It's not the worst cancer.
Okay.
Well, yeah. It is probably the best cancer to have.
That would be a game show, wouldn't it? To rank the cancers.
Very social media friendly. There must be a TikTok. I'm going to put basal cell at number 3.
In terms of ranking the skin cancers, there are 3 main types of skin cancer. So basal cell skin cancer, the one that we were talking about. The next one down in seriousness is the squamous cell skin cancer, which I'd never heard of, but you have certainly heard of the third type of skin cancer, which is the more dangerous one, which is, do you want to tell me?
Melanoma.
Melanoma is the right answer. Very well done.
Is the whole quiz going to be this grim, Johnny?
Phew. We're into the arts question next. So question number 2. Okay. Darcy Bustle, Margot Fontaine, and Anna Pavlova are all famous in which field of the arts?
I've got this one answer.
Go for it, Chris.
Ballet.
They are all prima ballerinas. You're absolutely correct.
I was going to say cake.
Which you're back on the cakes. So Madeira cake and
Pavlova. Yeah, I wonder how many other cakes we were going to roll out in this quiz.
Darcy Bustle is one of the poshest.
Do you know Darcy Bustle?
Not personally, but she was on a documentary. I think there was one. It was actually a really good doco. The BBC did a whole behind the scenes of Covent Garden. I think it was called The House or something like that, or The Garden. Yes, maybe it was called
The Garden. Sure.
And Darcy featured quite a bit, and she, you know, like it's always beautiful when someone from a profession is the exact stereotype cliche of what you expect that to be. So, you know, like in bakery, if you met a baker who's covered in flour with a big hat, Darcy is literally dresses, she walks around on pointy toes. She's the slightest thing, extremely posh, incredibly good at her job.
Well, she's actually Dame Darcy Bustle.
She might be now.
Her birth name, the name that she was given at birth, is Marnie Mercedes Darcy Pemberton Crittle.
Oh, that's even better.
So that absolutely ties in with what you're saying.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Yeah.
She's deposhed herself. She's rather than those people who marry to add hyphenated surname, she's actually shrunk her name to sound more common.
But it's still too posh even for a ballet dancer. She thought that was too highfalutin.
That was too much.
Needed to have more common touch with the rest of the ballerinas.
Yeah, well, what's interesting is that she has an Australian father, John Crittle, and an English mother, Andrea Williams. But then her mother is where the Bustle comes from, because her mother remarried to yet another Australian, a dentist, named Philip Bustle.
Was she in Australia, Johnny, this mother, or just had a thing for Aussies?
No, they were in England. They were in London. And so, she just had a thing for Australian men.
Gee, it'd be hard to meet Aussies in London, wouldn't it?
Very, very hard. And Welda, of course, Margot Fonteyn and Anna Pavlova were both ballerinas as well. All right, question number three. According to English folklore, what type of animal is associated with Dick Whittington?
He had a cat, right?
He did have a cat. Very well done. How do you know that?
The funny thing is, I don't know the story of Dick Whittington at all. The only thing I know about him, the one and only piece of information I've got on him, is he had a cat, because I sort of associate that, you know, Dick Whittington and his cat. But I don't know what happened.
That is the thing that he's most famous for, I guess. Mm. The legend, which was made popular through poems, plays and ballads in the 17th and 18th centuries, later provided the plot for, you know, Christmas pantos and that kind of thing. The story describes Dick's rise from poverty-stricken childhood to the fortune he made through the sale of this cat to a rat-infested country or place. So in different versions of the story, you know, it's in Persia and he goes and sells his cat to the what are they called?
The Persians.
Yeah, the Persians. and the cat gets rid of all the rats and the not the Tsar, what are they called in...
The Tsar of Persia, that's the one.
Not really.
The Shah. I think it's the Shah.
The Shah, you know, gives him half his fortune, and Dick goes with, you know, from having nothing but a cat to being a very rich person.
Isn't that interesting?
So that's the story.
I didn't know that either. I have an association that there's a cat, but isn't it interesting that they're so famously entwined, Dick and his cat, and yet he couldn't be rid of the cat quickly enough? The story seems to be predicated on the fact he was so greedy, he wanted to get rid of the cat just to earn a living, and he didn't care who he gave it to.
No, exactly. However, the real Dick Whittington, or Richard Whittington, who became Lord Mayor of London four times in the 1300s, did not come from a poor family or common stock.
He was married to Darcy Bustle.
He was an Australian. And there is no compelling evidence that he ever even owned a cat.
Oh, God.
Really? Okay.
All right, question number four. The first female prime minister in the world was Sirimavo Bandaranaike. Which country did she lead?
Ooh, how confident were you with the pronunciation there, Johnny?
Oh, how'd I go? That was pretty good.
That was good. You were happy with that.
It's probably not Australia.
No.
Correct.
The answer to all these questions usually about the first woman in high office, it's normally always New Zealand. But
that name
didn't sound Kiwi at all.
No, it's not.
I would steer you away from
Is it like Bangladesh or something like that?
You're close, sir.
Bhutan? Bhutan?
I will tell you that, like New Zealand, it is an island nation.
Sri Lanka? Ah.
It is Sri Lanka.
Oh, well done.
Very well done. Yeah.
And isn't that took progressive? Isn't that wonderfully progressive of Sri Lanka?
Well, yeah. She came to power in quite a interesting way. She served three terms as Prime Minister.
Wow.
From 1960 to 1965 and 1970 to 1977, and then once again in the country's presidential system from 1994 to 2000, governing under the presidency of her daughter, Chandrika Kumaratunga. I didn't do as well with that one.
I feel chastened. I haven't heard of her. She sounds like she's been quite a figure.
Yeah, she became Prime Minister the first time after her husband, Solomon, who preceded her as Prime Minister, was assassinated.
By her.
Yeah, that's one way of getting it.
Really power-hungry woman.
Really, really power-hungry. Yeah.
Oh, right.
So the party that he was the leader of convinced her to
carry on the legacy.
The leader.
And
after a short time as the leader of the opposition, after he was assassinated, she contested the 1960 election and won it, and attempted to bring in radical reforms, including nationalising the banking, education, industry and trade organisations, and was leader during the country's transition from an independent country in the Commonwealth of Nations to its status as a republic, and indeed a change of name. Do you know what it was called before it was Sri Lanka?
Not Ceylon, was it?
I reckon that's Ceylon.
Ceylon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ceylon.
Ceylon tea.
Exactly, Ceylon tea.
Ceylon tea, yeah.
but she is something of a divisive figure in that in her original kind of rise to power was predicated on a sort of division along racial lines in the country, you know, which has had lasting repercussions.
I see.
Interesting but divisive.
Yeah, I'm glad we don't have that system where if the male with one partner dies, the spouse is just put forward. Like, imagine if Gillard was knifed by Rudd and suddenly Tim Matheson is the Prime Minister of the country. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, no, or Jeanette. Like Jeanette Howard.
Or Jeanette Howard.
Or Jeanette. Yeah. Or what was ScoMo's...
Jenny and the girls take over.
My goodness.
Wow.
That's funny. All right. Question number five. True or false, singer Johnny Cash's real name was John Carter?
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Yeah, because, I know he's sort of related to June Carter Cash, right, who's also a singer. And so I'm going to guess
sort of related by marriage, like they were married.
Oh, married, okay. Well, I'm going to guess that that's true then. Or am I thinking of just her when I think?
But so she kept his original name and inherited his stage name. You say
it sounds like she took on both.
She took on both names. She could have gone 50-50, but she goes, no, I can't make up my mind. I'll just be June Carter Cash.
I think so.
I'll go with Andrew. I'll say true.
It's entirely false.
But hang on, there is a June Carter Cash. Right?
there is a June Carter Cash.
Maybe that was her maiden name.
But she was always June Carter.
She was June Carter.
Slightly a trick question.
I feel we're in the territory of the French border here. I mean,
in fact, his name wasn't even Johnny or John. His name was actually J.R. Cash.
Oh.
So he
JR, the initials.
The initials, and they didn't stand for anything.
He was given initials, but no name to go with them.
It is hilarious.
Normally, you'd only ever call yourself JR as some kind of showbiz catchy.
Yeah.
And he was given a showbiz name and abandoned it for Johnny, which isn't bad.
Which isn't bad, sure. That actually came about because when he enlisted in the US Air Force, they wouldn't accept initials as a first name. So he became John. And thereafter, he became Johnny when he became a professional musician.
What were his parents thinking? Were they dyslexic or lazy? I mean, why did they...
Apparently, the story is that they couldn't agree. One of them wanted to... I think the father wanted to call him John, or one of them wanted to call him John. The other wanted to call him Ray.
Right.
And rather than say...
Have both of those as given names?
No, they just went, we'll just take the first two initials.
JR.
Interesting.
I never knew that. That's really interesting. Yeah.
All right then. Well, we are going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
You're listening to the Saturday Quiz. I'm joined today by Chris Taylor and Andrew Hansen, and we are up to question number 6. Which country won the 2023... Rugby World Cup?
I know nothing about sport
at the best of times, and isn't rugby like one of the least popular sports?
Australia's star has really fallen. It's very sad what's become of the Wallabies. So we didn't even qualify. We sort of bowed out very early. I think at the end, it was the All Blacks were certainly in the final. Was it All Blacks South Africa or All Blacks England? I'm going to say South Africa All Blacks was the final.
That is correct.
Yeah, and isn't this weird? I remember following every game except the final. Like, was it South Africa, I think?
South Africa did win. Yeah. You are actually correct. I was there. Well, not there.
Wow.
I was in Paris where the World Cup was being held. But quite by accident, we were there on the weekend of the final, and we were walking home from a Vivaldi...
What's something we can do that's concerto. The opposite of a Rugby World Cup? Classical music.
Watching Vivaldi in Paris at the time.
So we were walking home and passed a bunch of, pubs or... what do they call them in
wine
Paris?
Bars?
Wine bars that had had it on the big screen and got absolutely sucked in because it was so compelling. We walked by right at the moment that the All Blacks, New Zealand, scored a try to bring the scores much closer, within one. So within a single point, I think it was 12-11 was the score, and they had a kick to convert the try, but it was from far out wide, and they missed that kick, but it felt inevitable that New Zealand would come over the top of South Africa. They were driving so hard, and then they had another attempt at a penalty kick which would have put them in front. And again, they missed that kick.
Oh, heartbreaking.
So there were two late kicks that could have won New Zealand the World Cup, but they just didn't. And it was an amazing, amazing scenes.
The quality games were extraordinary. I saw, was it Ireland and maybe New Zealand? It was just one of the best games of rugby I'd ever seen. And I'm so glad.
Can't remember who played, but gripping.
I'm very relieved I got that right because my brother actually works in rugby union, and he'd be appalled if I got that wrong. But sad for New Zealand, I'm sure, but good for South Africa.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, you must be one of the most eclectic people I've ever met, Johnny. I mean, there wouldn't have been too many people walking out of that Vivaldi concert who were like, what should we do next? I know, let's go watch the rugby at the pub.
Maybe, I'm not sure. All right, question number 7. In a car, what does a tachometer or tachometer typically measure?
Ooh, God, this is not my area.
Nor mine. I'm not an engineer.
I've heard of you were drivers or car mad.
I've just got a car for the first time in 20 years this year because of the baby. So I am back behind the wheel.
Did you? You haven't had a car for 20 years, Dave?
No, proudly.
That's
proudly.
You.
It's not the... I've heard of it. It's not the... Is it the thing that measures how many miles or Ks the car has done over the course of its life?
Oh,
is it that? No. Or is that the odometer?
It's an odometer. I'm going to guess it's like the revs. Does it measure like how fast the engine's spinning? I mean, is it a revs measurer?
That is exact. It is a revs measurer. Yeah, absolutely. Wow. It's revolutions per minute, the RPMs.
That it measures. There we go.
But interestingly... How's your Greek? Did either of you do Greek?
A bit rusty.
ancient Greek's better than my modern Greek, but yeah. Tachos. Tachos.
Actually means speed, and metron is measure.
Yep.
So it's a speed measurer. So essentially the words tachometer or tachometer and speedometer mean exactly the same thing. And most cars have both. So a speedometer measures the speed that the vehicle is travelling, but the tachy measures the internal speed of the engine.
So that would be an internal dial. I'm just trying to visualise my dashboard. There's obviously the big speedo.
The speedo, which
tells me if I'm going
to, yeah, you know,
is, and then there's all these sort of separate dials. I never have a clue what they're measuring or telling me.
So it measures. It's the one. Do you drive a manual or a?
Don't be ridiculous,
Johnny. Okay, no. So it's an automatic that you're driving. You will see that a taco is probably more useful in a manual vehicle because it tells you. You know, the tens of thousands of revolutions per minute that the engine is moving and tells you essentially when to change gears.
Yeah, right. Would be useful in a manual.
The more,
yeah.
You know, Chris it goes lost. Like that kind of deal.
We used to laugh sometimes, I think, in Chaser meetings if Chris's driving came up because I think it was Craig... Rucastle observed that, you know, when Chris drives, he's like an old lady who hunches very far forward over the steering wheel. Isn't that how Mole Man drives in The Simpsons? You know, peering over the top of the steering wheel, blinking
as far forward as it could possibly go. even short people come in if they want to borrow my car and they move the seat back.
That's funny. All right, question number 8. Which Academy Award-winning actress has been the face of Dior's J'adore perfume for almost 20 years?
Oh, who does J'adore?
Is that our Kate? Is that,
it's not our Kate.
It's not our
no,
Kate.
Correct.
She had something else, I think, didn't
oh,
she?
Oh, she's Armani. She's Armani.
Yes. Dior. Yeah. Who does J'adore? It's not Nicole, right? It's not Nicole, doesn't
it? No, it's not an Australian.
Is it? Okay. It's not Isabella Rossellini, is it?
These names.
Is it Scarlett Johansson? Is it?
No, it's not Scarlett Johansson.
Gosh.
Okay, we're into clue territory now, I think, Johnny.
Okay, really all right.
Yes.
I will tell you that question number 6 of this quiz relates in a kind of roundabout way to this actress.
That was the car
a long time
one.
Ago. I can't remember.
No, not the car one.
What was 6?
This is
rugby.
Eight.
Rugby.
Yes.
Oh, South Africa, of course, from Monster.
Exactly right.
Charlize Theron.
Development.
Is it Charlize?
Charlize Theron is the right answer. Very well done.
Fabulous.
Okay.
Yes. In 2004, she replaced Estonian model Tiiu Kuik as the spokeswoman in the J'adore advertisement.
Really?
Do you know the fragrance, J'adore?
I don't know what it smells like, no. But I did work with Charlize Theron once, and what? I don't know if she was wearing J'adore, but she was the subject of... there was a series of prank segments that we did on The Chasers War and Everything called Mr. 10 Questions, where I played a journalist who, instead of asking one question when he turned up to a press conference, would ask 10 in a row without a pause and then expect the person to remember all 10 and answer them. And the very first one we shot was with Charlize Theron, she was doing a red carpet. And so, yeah, I stopped her on the carpet and fired 10 questions at her. But she was not a great sport. Sorry, Johnny.
What was the kind of flavour of the questions?
Well, I think it was something like, "Hi, Charlize, I've just got 10 questions for you. First of all, how are you enjoying Australia? Second, how long did it take to get here? Third, what are you wearing today? And fourth, blah, blah, blah." And rattled them off.
It's hilarious.
She interrupted me.
Didn't they segue into things like Johnny might be asking in a quiz? They sort of became trivia questions.
Oh, they did. By question eight, which Portuguese territory is located a very long way?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I love that. And so she was the your first mark for that
she
one?
She was the very first one that I did for it. Yeah, yeah.
And I think she was a good sport not a particularly from memory, wasn't she?
She was smiley, but she did, halfway through the questions, say, "That is a lot of questions," and walk away. She didn't attempt to answer the questions or even listen to them all.
She just named the joke, and that was...
Yes.
This character that Andrew G'd almost caused an international incident when he did the same set of... Mr. 10 Questions with Sophia Loren, who was out here promoting some Italian film festival. Yeah. And, you know, a very, very noble, proper woman. And one of the questions, wasn't it, Andrew? I think sort of number 7 in the mix was, "Did you just fart?" And it did not go down well, because I think Michael Housen, who was representing her, goes, "Oh, that's no way to treat Sophia. It's absolute disgrace."
And he was furious. He said, I want to punch those fellows on the nose, is what he said. Not in the face. He said, on the nose. like you'd say in the 1920s. Amazing. and the Italian community, because you know she's deified, really. I mean, they do see her as a sort of goddess, really. And I mean,
someone who would never fart.
And they were really disgusted. I remember, because the press conference was held in a room with a lot of Italians, and when I walked out of the room, they were scowling and hissing at me, because Italians, they're quite emotional too. I still remember an old lady looking up at me and saying, "You are disgusting."
Wow.
Because I'd asked 10 questions.
Incredible. All right, question number 9. We're nearly there, fellas. Question number 9. Catherine King is the federal minister for... And there's a multiple choice here. Do you need it?
Probably, yes. I will. But, mate, Chris, maybe you can go open-ended.
No, she's been in the news a lot lately.
I'm out
of
the loop.
Give us the options. She was...
Okay.
Yeah.
3 options. Here they are. A, B, and C. A, transport. B, education. Or C, environment.
Yeah, I'm too out of the loop.
No, Andrew's out.
These days.
No, I was really hoping the multiple choice would clarify things for me.
I reckon...
I've got it.
Yep.
She was in the news a lot over the whole Qatar Airways bizzo, so transport, I'm going to say.
Very well done. Very well put together. Well, I was going to say you could probably elimination, by a process of elimination, you can probably work it out. Because do you know who the environment minister is?
That's Tanya Plibersek.
That is Tanya Plibersek. Very well done. And what about education?
She's doing education now.
Is anyone in charge
of
education?
Which is not Tanya Plibersek.
No, they've given up. Probably like the same as the teachers. Nobody wants to do it.
It's not Jason Clare, is it?
It is Jason Clare.
Well done, Tay.
Very
well done, Tay.
Brilliant. All right. Well, we are up to the final question. Question number 10. You've done very well, gentlemen, I have to say. Question number 10. Which novel begins, "All children except one grow up"? And there's a bonus point for naming who wrote it.
Wow.
Oh, I'm going to guess it's Well, hang on. Is there a book? I mean, well, Peter Pan and Wendy is, like, is a play, right?
It's, I was going to say it's a Peter it's Pan the plot story. Of Peter Pan, isn't it? J.M. Barrie, but it's.
But is yeah, that
you,
a novel?
You thought it was a play. That, you thought it was a play, did you?
I feel like it is a play, right? It's a book as well, maybe?
It's not. Was Benjamin Button a novel before?
Benjamin Button is a novel. Before it was a movie. Okay. But you have already got it. It's Peter Pan.
Oh, it's Peter Pan.
Oh, it's Peter Pan. Yeah.
And you have already said the author, which is J.M. Barrie. Yeah, very well done. All children except one grow up is the opening line. And it was Peter Pan appeared originally in a short story, which I can't remember the name of. And then that character was sort of explored more thoroughly in Peter Pan, which then became a play, and he just kept on going back to the well, I guess.
Oh, he had one times. Idea, and he did
one idea.
There's a musical, there's a TikTok.
So speaking of one ideas, guys, your show Australian Epic, I shouldn't tar you with that brush, that's terrible, is on this Wednesday.
Yeah.
On the ABC. And then, so Wednesday, the 8th of November at 9 p.m. on ABC TV, and thereafter on iView.
You can watch the whole lot on iView in one long binge if that's how you like to view things. Otherwise, yeah, every week, 9 o'clock on Wednesday nights.
Brilliant. But, gentlemen, you've done exceptionally well at the quiz. It's been an absolute delight having you on. Good luck. Best of luck. Break legs, I guess.
Thank you.
With Australian Epic. I can't wait to watch it, and I'm sure all my listeners will watch it as well.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to quiz with you today, Johnny. Thanks so much for having us on.
I've had a blast. Yeah, I've had a great time, Johnny. Thank you.
Pleasure. See you next time. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Saturday Quiz. It really is good to be back. Thank you to my guests this week, Andrew Hansen and Chris Taylor. Thanks, as always, to the wonderful Cindy McDonald for writing the questions. Special thanks to William McKenna, who stepped in and did such a fantastic job of hosting the podcast so that I could go away on holidays for the last month. And thank you to you, the listeners, who keep coming back week after week. It really does make me happy to know how much you like the show. This episode was recorded in Naam on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. I acknowledge their traditions of sharing stories and knowledge for millennia on this land and pay my respects to their elders past and present. My name's John Leary, and I'll have more questions for you same time next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.